Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is David on Friday, the 21st of November. And this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, let me just have a quick few comments on this week, which has been really quite an exciting week here overall. Well, what are some of the big issues? I would say, first of all, that we had an interest rate cut in China here today, and the markets generally have really liked that. That lifted resources, and it also enabled China to gave China a small upward dynamic. It steadied markets generally here, I would say. And then, of course, we have also had the news emerging of further easing by Mario Draghi of the ECB. Now, that's very important, and my feeling is that there's been, it's a little bit of a battle going on there. Between Mario Draghi, who's certainly a very capable guy and a very diplomatic guy, but he was up against the ECB governing council member, I don't know if I'll pronounce this correctly, but Klaus Knot, and also the Bundesbank President Jen Weidmann, who were certainly opposed to the QE, but well, it looks like we're going to get it, and Europe has celebrated that as well. So those markets were up strongly. India, another new high, new all time high. In here today, that's one of the great gainers of the year. As a matter of fact, let's look at some of these major markets in here right now. The BSE Sensex Index, it is up 34.27% in U.S. dollar terms this year. So that's really very much a top leader here overall. But the Asia Pacific region is no slouch. Now, the Shanghai Composite Index is up 16.20% in US dollar terms. There aren't that many losers, but there are a few. South Korea down just under 7.5%. Australia down just over 3.5%. Again, this is all in U.S. dollar terms for ease of comparison. Malaysia down almost 5%. But again, Thailand up over 21%. Indonesia up over 20%. New Zealand up over 11%. We look at Europe, and it's tough in U.S. dollar terms. And they are mostly down, not hugely, but well, German DAX index down 8.14%. I mean, the UK index is down nearly 5.5%. Within Europe, Switzerland is a winner, but not, of course, in the EU. I mean, Switzerland's up 1.85%. Then we go on to Wall Street, and well, the best performer there, I'm looking at three U.S. indices here right now. They may well be a higher performing, slightly higher performing one, but the NASDAQ Composite is up 12.84%, S&P up 11.64%, Dow up 7.44%, Canada up nearly 5%, Mexico virtually unchanged on the year. Brazil, poor old Brazil, but it's up 2.26%. Had a good day in here today. Well, actually, it did that today. It was up over 5% here today, and that's because the government, which was not favored by market people at all, as you will recall. excuse me, but Prime Minister Rousseff has appointed an economist who to a senior position in the cabinet. Owen's written about this here today, and it's someone that was very much favored by the financial sector here overall. Okay, so what can we say? Well, generally here, first about the markets and build out the picture. We have seen an incredibly good rally from that following that October shakeout, and it carried all of those U.S. indices except for the Russell 2000 up to a new high ground. But importantly, the Russell 2000 is right up near the upper side of its trading range overall. And investors have derived a lot of encouragement from that. I think it has also demonstrated that there's still money on the sidelines coming into the market. We also know that while there has certainly been some new supply, not least more so than we had seen in any year for quite a while. And the big one, of course, was the Alibaba float. But that has been partially offset over the year by ongoing share buybacks by corporations, which often find this as an effective way to utilize cash, and it also bumps up their earnings, flatters the earnings somewhat. Wall Street has high valuations relative to other stock markets in most of the sectors, but that well, the background is strong for the most part. U.S. has the technology lead, and I banged on for several years about the accelerated rate of technology that we are seeing, and the U.S. is right at the forefront of that, and that has been hugely important for in terms of overall corporate efficiency at every single level. And usually you talk about technology, and so many people think, well, what are we talking about? iPads and iPhones and that sort of thing. Well, that's certainly consumer technology. But just think of the industrialization of the internet, and the way technology is making big machines so much smarter, making everything every business so much more efficient. Okay. Also, the U.S. has the most, by far, the most autonomies, the global autonomies, these big multinational companies, which really have outgrown. They're called autonomies because they've outgrown their domestic economies, and these companies are hugely powerful and becoming more so practically every day. Even though global growth has been slow for well, compared to what people were hoping for or what central banks have been trying to achieve following that very big credit crisis recession. Well, if I try to sum it up, I'd say we're back in a sweet spot here because interest rates, long-term interest rates, I should say, are still really quite low. I mean, look at the US 10-year in here today. If I just wrote that down, and it's 2.30. That's incredible here. And yes, the US economy is definitely picking up. Germany's 10-year yield is just about 0.8%. So these interest rates remain extremely low. That's not an incentive to really stay in that sector, although the people who've been in it for quite some time largely remain there. But again, I'm talking about stock markets here right now, and just mention the interest rates because that's a tailwind. Again, we have the quantitative easing from the ECB. In Europe, in the EU, we also have the quantitative easing that's taking place in Japan. Everybody talks about US quantitative easing being over, but actually, although they've stopped buying the government bonds, they haven't taken any of that money out of the system. So it's still there, really helping these economies. So and also, I would say that these central banks are still more concerned about deflation than inflation. Now, we don't have much net deflation. We're very, very close to it, or have a little bit of it in Europe. Japan has, well, not quite shaken it off entirely, but is certainly going hell for leather to achieve that, and Japan will achieve that, in my opinion. So, without concern of inflation, over inflation from the central banks, since the interest rates stay generally low, contributing to that sweet spot. And to express it another way, is that monetary policy really does favor the bulls. Now, a lot of people are worrying, well, what's going to happen? Is QE going to cause an outbreak of inflation, which is a big problem in a few years' time? Nobody can answer that question for sure in here today. What we do know is that when those inflation pressures do start to pick up, beyond the levels that central banks wish to see, and that will be over 2%. Until that actually happens, this is very much still a sweet spot for global stock markets. What can disrupt that? Well, it can be wild cards. Russia's the most serious one. Black swans. For instance, at the beginning of the year, who was expecting Russia to invade Ukraine? Not that many international investors. Who was expecting the outbreak of Ebola? Not all that many people. So, we can get these black swans that appear from time to time. You can't go all that many months without seeing one or two, greater or smaller. But generally speaking, this is still a very, very favorable overall environment for stock markets. And if Wall Street's able to get enough growth, it'll keep those and corporates corporate earnings overall, again flattered by the share buybacks, but corporate earnings are way outperforming the US GDP growth figures. And again, it's the autonomies that are leading in that department. So this is favorable. Okay. What are the best, perhaps, overall? Well, I like the Asia Pacific region here generally. India, China, Japan, those would be right at the top of my list. I'd put New Zealand right up there. And I think probably also Australia, because I think that we will get a recovery in the resources sector, although it has certainly been slower than I actually thought overall. But those resources shares, the quality ones now I'm thinking about, the BHP Billitons, Rio Tintos, very attractive valuations here overall. Again, they produce iron ore, and that price has just fallen very, very steeply. But these commodities are cyclical overall, and people have generally moved out of the sector. Good yields from those two shares. They can probably maintain those yields. And I would expect a decent recovery from those resources shares before we get a serious tightening in overall monetary rates. And that's what usually happens, that before you get, for instance, Wall Street's bull market ending, and then when Wall Street's bull market ends, a good many others are called into question a few months thereafter. But during that period, you usually get a good strong rebound in resources prices, as I've mentioned on many times in the past. That hasn't happened yet. Okay, let's move on to the government bonds. I won't spend too much time on this overall, but I've been issuing, I should say, warnings here. This is a very long in the tooth bull market, but obviously the credit crisis, the big credit crisis recession, that 2008 collapse, that really added several more years to this global bond market bull trend overall. But you know that the next big move in rates has almost certainly got to be upwards. And that'll be costly for people who really overstay. Yet, in terms of a real return basis, they're still doing okay. I think, provided people in those markets have their eyes wide open rather than becoming just seduced by the long secular trend that they've been betting from. They'll do okay, but would I want to put new money in that sector? Not for a minute. There are far too many stock markets that are very much in form, that benefit from this environment, that have decent yields. I think they're much more interesting than the global bond markets. My big issue with global bond markets is when we do start to see those yields move up sharply, then they will start to become much more competitive relative to equities. But that's a long way off. Well, it's certainly a long way off in terms of yields that we see at the moment. And hopefully they don't, those long-term government bond yields don't move up all that quickly. That will be better for investors in bonds. It'll also be better for investors in equities, and I think that's probably likely to be the case. In other words, over the next few months and probably the next year or so, we're unlikely to see big upward pressure on bond prices. But that's obviously a forecast that I can monitor. We can all monitor very, very closely, watch it on the charts. But there's no sign of a big upward push in bond yields at this stage, to state the obvious. What about currencies? They've certainly become more volatile. The U.S. dollar had a big day in here today. And the U.S. dollar index is up to 88.276. 88.276. Now, that, if you look at the charts of DXY, which is the dollar index, you will see that that's right in the region of the highs that we saw in 2008, 9, and 10. I was saying in a few earlier audios, 2007, but no, the highs were in 2000, over eight, just over 88, were in 2008, 9, and 10, and the Fed stepped in to weaken the dollar. So we're back there at those same levels now. Will the Fed step in? I think not. Fed will certainly be monitoring this closely at this stage. But the U.S. economy is stronger than it was back in those years, and which of course was the year of the big credit crisis recession and the next 2 years thereafter. So I think they are more likely to stand back because again, what's the benefit of this? Does help to keep inflationary pressures in check, and it delays. And there's not a big deflationary risk in the U.S. But what it does mean is that the Fed will be able to keep short-term interest rates lower for longer. A lot of people who were talking about hikes in U.S. short-term interest rates, well, the beginning of this year, they were talking about interest rate hikes in the autumn. I always felt that was too soon. And in mid-year, they were talking about interest rate hikes in the first quarter of 2015, and then a few months later, they were talking about them in the third quarter, and that's about where they are right now. People are talking about interest rate hikes start in the U.S. starting in the third quarter of the year. Well, that gives us a good run here for a number of months, and let's see if those forecasts are moved out once again. I think that the Fed will watch carefully regarding the dollar's strength. Certainly, if it accelerates from here, I think they would want to slow it down. Watch to see what U.S. exporters say. That's going to be very, very important. If they start to complain, then that would, well, the Fed would certainly be listening out for that. And obviously, the Fed does not want to see the dollar go up so much that it damages the U.S. economy's gradual recovery, but nevertheless a recovery that is picking up pace at a slow and somewhat erratic rate. I also wonder if this fourth quarter of the year will, given the weather that we've seen in the USA, all caused by global warming, of course, but will that cold weather, God, yeah, I say that with a twinkle in my eye, as I'm sure you would guess. But will cold weather slow down the U.S. economy, as we also saw for a period last year? And there's a risk, there's a real risk of that. If that is the case, then that might cause a little wobble in the stock market, but again, it would extend the start of higher short-term interest rates. Okay, but I was talking about currencies, was I? Or that's what I was supposed to be doing. The main story here is this U.S. dollar strength. What's weak? Well, the euro. And the ECB certainly wants that. That's down to 1.2391 in here today. Also, the Bank of England has been quite happy to see sterling pull back, and I think they would not mind sterling going down to at least the 150 level against the dollar. It's currently at 156.56, 1.5656. Also, the Australians would not mind seeing their currency weaken a little bit further against the US dollar. They actually gained a bit in here today, 0.86770. So far, the Chinese renminbi is holding steady here against the US dollar. And despite the interest rate hike cut that we saw in here today, and the Indian rupee, which had been matching the dollar, gave up a little bit of ground over the last month, but has come back down from that 61 level against rupees against the US dollar. And the central bank really would like it at about that 60, about the 60 level. We have seen softening in a number of those smaller Asian market currencies, and I think they need to be watched fairly closely. And I'm thinking of Thailand and Malaysia and Indonesia in particular. What about hard money? And that's gold, and it's high beta companion, silver, but people were not thinking of them as hard money when prices were racing downwards. Technically, it's really very interesting here for precious metals. They've had a reasonably good day here today. I'll just run through some of those prices. Palladium is at seven, just almost at 790, so it's up over $22 in here today. Silver still trading after hours, according to my screen, but that's up over 27 cents at 16.41. It was up at a high of the day at 1660, but that's a good move here. Again, it's just there. It's recovering, and platinum also had a good day in here today. $1,227. That's up over $21. Gold bullion steady, and over $1,201, 1,201 and change. That is very close to looking like a failed downside break. It's gotta go a bit higher though. Well, I should say, what's behind this? I've mentioned in the last couple of weeks that as prices surged downwards, well, that made the people who were running the short game, and the I'm talking about the big investment banks in the main, and also there was certainly a fair amount has been still is a fair amount of high frequency trading, particularly in silver, which can swing around in a matter of seconds here, and has had some daily ranges of well over a dollar. And on, on a commodity at $15 or $16, that's those are big swings. But while that's continued, and while the various funds that are using these as a plaything and talking them down, and there are some scary forecasts to the downside. I've pointed out that we often see those scary downside forecasts when markets are getting somewhat oversold and the bears are trying to keep overall sentiment on their side and even reassure themselves. But what's also going on is that the value buyers who are not coming into the futures, but I'm talking about Indians buying Chinese are the biggest buyers overall. And incidentally, a point I've made before, but worth repeating, is that China is now the world's biggest gold producer, and it doesn't export any of it. So just gradually stockpiling here. And there are also a few articles around saying that Russia is bought some gold. I'm a little bit surprised by that. I'm not sure quite why. Maybe they're trying to support the ruble a little bit. Now, industrial metals, well, they're It depends which one we talk about. Aluminium's done the best in recent months, and that's because the oil price has been quite low, and there's to create the aluminium does require a lot of energy. That's why so many of the smelting facilities are in oil-producing regions of the globe, not least in the Middle East. So, But then on the other side of the equation, one that's not traded on futures, but iron ore, has been in a major overall downtrend. We have not seen the big producers cut back supply. I think one of the reasons for that is because technology has enabled them to mine the metals more profitably than in previous cycles. And I think they're willing to ride out as big suppliers, they're willing to ride out this downward cycle on the basis that it's also likely to knock out a lot of the higher cost producers of these metals, including a fair number of Chinese suppliers of industrial metals. That's the I think the main story here overall. That's why in looking at any of the mining shares that I would not hope to get lucky in one of the cheapest bombed out ones, although inevitably people will succeed in that when the cycle does fully turn. But the big miners that offer the decent dividends and actually control the industries more than any other companies, they're the ones to look at in my opinion. I think overall, mining prices are really quite attractive. I think that iron ore price is extremely attractive. It's certainly well. Again, it's not something that we can that you and I can buy. It's not traded on the futures markets, and it's really been in catching a falling knife territory in this steep decline here overall, and that has worried some financial commentators, saying, "Well, the global economy is terribly, terribly weak." I demand certainly, and not least from China, has not been as strong as it has been in past years, clearly. But I think this is largely a fact that they're able to mine it much more efficiently than previously, and are trying to, as I say, to force some of the higher cost producers out of the market. It's the same thing that appears to be happening in the oil market overall. And we have that important meeting next week. I think it's next Wednesday. I believe, but it'll certainly be very much in the papers. And that's the first OPEC meeting in a while. A lot of uncertainty in terms of what's going to emerge from that. That'll probably lead to some choppy price action. And we're seeing some short covering ahead of the meeting, as we saw in here today. But I think the market will be choppy because traders of these oil contracts will not be quite sure what the implications are or what to expect. But my overall view, which you've probably heard before, is that OPEC is weaker now than it's ever been in the past. And this is really a secular trend change here underway. It's one that I have been forecasting for a number of years, but I felt that we'd see it really in the latter part of this decade, and we're already seeing it before we even reach the midpoint. Has this come too soon? In other words, could oil actually, with a cutback of, well, if we were to see OPEC promise a significant cutback, prices could probably bounce back up to the $80-$90 range here. But would we actually get that big supply reduction? So often we've had cheating by a number of the countries, which are really suffering from these low oil prices because they just kept increasing their spending every year on the belief that oil prices would keep on going higher as so many people were forecasting for so many years. Well, that's over. The peak in crude oil, in my opinion, occurred in 2008 when we had that run up in the Brent price to $143. I don't think we will ever see that again in real money terms. If we get a lot of inflation, which would occur immediately, but you take a 10, 20-year view, there'll be some outbreaks of inflation, and but in real terms, in other words, inflation adjusted, I don't think we'll get anywhere near that previous high, and that's very good for the for the global economy. Oil exporters excluded, of course, but the developed economies and the developing economies, it's heaven sent for India. The U.S. economy has already benefited from lower oil prices in the U.S. because of its own technological advantage and willingness to push ahead with the fracking. More countries will do that. And so I think these oil producers, as I've said, have a weakened hand, and I don't think that will change. I'll repeat the point that I think it's a secular change here overall. And so more countries can actually produce oil, but the even bigger story is that oil will decline in influence over the next decade or two and beyond. Here, one of the big factors contributing to that right now is, of course, the natural gas, which is a cleaner fuel and has many similar uses. But then all the renewables that are coming on stream, led, of course, by solar. And I think solar will become increasingly important for the rest of our lives as they're able to capture, technology enables solar power to capture more and more of the energy value of sunlight. And then new nuclear is very slowly coming back into fashion. It'll take a number of years, but we will see more of that. And if we take this is a big picture, long-term outlook, 20, 30 years from now, I would not be surprised if we see some nuclear fusion becoming not only will we have the technology for that, but it may well become an economical source of energy, and that's I've always described that as very much the Holy Grail. Seemed pretty much out of reach, but 20, 30 years, I think we'll definitely see it, and then oil prices will be much lower. So what does that all mean? I think it'll be good for global GDP growth, extremely good for global GDP growth. I think that who will be the biggest beneficiaries from that global GDP growth? Well, corporations, the big autonomies, they will do phenomenally well in that environment. Now, an autonomy can fall off the rails if you get bad management decisions. But if you look at the autonomy sector in the chart library, a whole separate sector devoted to the autonomies. Again, these are those big multinational companies which derive a considerable portion of their earnings from their global activities. You could base your whole portfolio operation in a very diversified, interesting, and somewhat conservative portfolio, and that you're dealing with seasoned companies here, just based on the autonomies. And I know some subscribers are actually doing that. And don't ever hesitate to look through those. You just don't want to pay too much for any autonomy when it's way overextended in an uptrend relative to its 200-day moving average. Best always look at them on a weekly chart with that the weekly five or 10-year chart with the 200-day moving average. And if they get overextended relative to the moving average, you can expect a better buying opportunity when they get a pullback. When they eventually break beneath the 200-day moving average for more than a brief period and turn the moving average downwards, you know you're in at least a medium-term corrective phase. But you know that. And I don't want to go on too long on this. So it's been an exciting week. It'll certainly be an exciting week next week with that OPEC meeting, and no doubt there'll be other interesting things going on. I look forward to discussing it. All the very best to all of you. Good night.